just for you, sir, on your computer. It's not about the future, but it's all the way from Utah. No matter where you're from, you can download This Week in Mormons. Join Jeff and Al and round up your pals to bring a jello salad as you listen to my ballad. I promise you won't get bored as they talk more and more and more. And
ladies
more
and gentlemen, welcome to This Week in Mormons, your favorite Mormon news podcast. We're here to talk to you about the issues and the things that matter.
Sunday.
In
the monster truck rally you've all been waiting for.
In the corner above have the you ever warehouse. Seen, Alan Doan.
Have you ever seen that prank call that they did with, it was the old WWE wrestler, Steve, I forget the name.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It's like, oh, no. You probably haven't seen this. It's genius. I'll send it to you. It's like 5 minutes of them calling somebody and like trying to sell her this package, and she's like no, and he's like, well then you're not gonna be able to see the rip roaring hits of every time. She's like, I hate you, don't call her. It's very entertaining, Jeff.
This is the worst story you've
ever
told.
We'll link to it. I'm just saying that my antics are funny.
You are in my bad graces right now, so I don't care.
Jeff, why are you being
Because
the way you
are? We recorded 1 minute of show and then you froze before. I lost a minute of my life. We lost the spontaneity.
One glorious
We had
minute.
So much spontaneity going and no, we had to retry.
I said hello in 11 different languages.
Yeah. And it was
I don't know if you noticed that. That was
beautiful
fun.
And I loved it.
It was
and then I was then was I really proceeded good. To try to tell you a story about why I'm trying to call my have my mom go by Mamgie as a grandma. And then it ended.
Isn't that the Arrested Development grandma?
Oh, no. Is it Mamgie? Man, that does sound close, doesn't it?
That's why I thought that was that was such a great idea. It's like Mamgie.
I don't think it's Arrested. Oh, yeah. Now you've got me going on that. This is not the reason behind that.
I don't believe it, what, Jeff. Everything you do in life is fueled by your love.
No, and now I'm looking up Lucille Bluth nicknames. It's very important we figure this out. I don't know. Whatever. I was going for Mamgie because it's the Welsh name for grandma. And so I was going for my Welsh heritage, yo.
Yeah,
and
whatever.
So I had my mom. I want her to go by it. And that's what happened. I'm still working on that. Did it happen? She's buckling little by little. It's pretty good. It's good.
The four most beautiful words in the English language. You wore me down.
Or she's buckling, it's good. That's also
it. Nope.
Oh, it's fair enough. So she's coming out here again this week.
Jeff.
So we're going to see her. And you were out here last week, which was tremendous.
What? Why is your mom? Didn't you see her last
week? Yeah, she basically
week?
Lives here now. She just will not leave us alone. So I can say whatever I want about my mom because she doesn't listen to the show very much. So I can say anything.
Jeff, I tried to come visit you last week, and you had another sibling, a family member, staying on
That's
your
true.
Couch.
That's true. You succeeded in visiting me. It worked.
Why can't your family get a hotel so that I can stay on your couch when
because
I want to
Because you're
come
a
see
quilt
you.
Mogul, and my sister is a public servant.
No, she is a teacher. That girl makes bank because she's not a teacher in some poor state like Oklahoma. She's
in Arizona, which is
where
actually ranked
rich.
Last in the nation as far as like teacher wellness
places to live.
Terrible. Well, I'd rather be dead in California than alive in Arizona.
If I can't find a horny immigrant in 3 days,
oh, now I gotta use the censor thing because you.
No, Jeff, is horny?
It's
too bad
not
to
really
say,
a, from our target audience. I mean,
That's fair, but it's a great quote from Arrested Development. That one of Job's.
Sometimes I
lines.
Honestly feel like this show only exists as some form of catharsis for Al. You have a stressful life running a business, and I know you are calculated in what you say from marketing that and establishing your brand. And when you get on here, you just say whatever you want and don't care. And I think this is like your one outlet to just not care about stuff.
Yeah, this is the one outlet where we speak to like 5,000 people at a time. And I don't care about that. Everywhere else, I speak to like six people.
But here you're like, I don't care about using language that's appropriate.
10,000 people be listening. I'm like, guess what? Joe Bluth once said, beep. Yeah, that's fair. First off, I'm sorry for insinuating that anybody would ever be
a Randy immigrant. Is that what you're going at?
Yeah, now that we're here, now that we're Monday morning quarterbacking this thing, I see sort of where I went wrong. I should have zigged when I zagged. That's fair, Jeff.
I think you'll also be happy to know, Al, that I saw that Chris Hansen's bringing back his To Catch a Predator series, which I know you love.
No, yeah. Is he really?
Everything's getting revived. Full House. Girls is getting revived. Everything's being revived.
How do you do a reboot of To Catch a Predator? They're like, and this time, the predators are actually.
Well, I think the
jaguars.
Old ones did not capitalize on social media, so that'll clearly play into it.
Oh, a lot of Twitter.
A lot of Snapchats from Hades. It's going to be terrible.
I've never felt darker than To Catch a Predator. You know, there's never been like there's. It's just an absolutely foreboding feeling. As you're like,
just watch The Americans. You'll feel plenty. You'll be great.
I've tried to watch The Americans, but I couldn't.
I couldn't make it through. To people.
That's a rough show, man.
You know, Cold War was a rough time. Not like this puny
what's
this war
it?
On terror. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, because I saw The Bridge of Spies, which I thought was going to be a Jason Bourne reboot. Turns out that's just like a lazy story about Tom Hanks.
So did you not enjoy Bridge of Spies? Because it's supposed to be very good.
Well, no, I enjoyed it, but it's legitimately like Tom Hanks is in the terminal again, and we're just supposed to watch him do his wonders. Yeah, good. I mean, great acting. Phenomenal acting. A good story, too, but not when you're looking for Matt Damon.
Sorry for your suffering, buddy.
I hate to be that guy, but not an Oscar for me.
By the way, have you seen the most recent trailer for The Force Awakens?
Yes, I have, obviously.
Chills.
That one, it's sweep the Oscars.
That is not going to sweep the Oscars because Vin Diesel already told us that Furious 7 will be winning Best Picture, and I believe him.
Rest in peace, Paul Walker. Rest in peace.
Well, what a lovely time. But, Al, it was wonderful to have you out here last week, however briefly. We made it to the airport on time, if you remember our crazy run-up.
Yeah, you got on the flight okay? Well, because we got to pull out, and Jeff says, I should have checked the traffic. I feel like most of your life has been around checking traffic between Orange County, L.A.
I think when you grow up in the Southland, you do develop an acute sense and need to be on top of traffic. And the traffic in D.C. area is pretty bad overall, so you have to see what's doing.
Like, I always wonder, why do you share traffic and weather together on the nines? And then I meet people like you, and I say,
that's a whole other topic of discussion, though. How have traffic check-ins on the radio and such maintained relevancy in the internet age? Because I don't ever care about those. I just look at my phone. You know, I just check out Google Maps or Waze and see what's going on and move on with my day.
Well, no, think about it, though. Think about it. You're there, and you're saying, why do we exist? We're a radio station. You say,
I understand why. There are plenty of people who are not into the phones and the apps. I'm not going to name names, but chances are they collect Social Security. Who's to say? I don't know. And
old people?
I don't call them old. I call them youthfully challenged. But if you want to label them as old, do whatever you want.
You're ready to run for governor.
I can't wait to run for governor. I don't know. I could do it in Virginia, but that's kind of a big state to tackle. West Virginia, I feel like I could do very well in.
Mountain Mama.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, that worked out. It was fun. So, how was yours? You've told us about you had this whole big stake split coming up, right? I mean, that's been a big thing on your horizon. So,
The far west stake of Zion now exists in the world. It's pretty exciting. It was a pretty big weekend. You know, I was busy all of Saturday and Sunday. We were in meetings. It was interesting. They asked a couple of different people for suggestions on who, because so the process of calling a new stake president, the 70 will come, and they don't know anybody here, and they just spend a couple of days, like a weekend, talking to people. And in fact, the 70 that was down here, Elder Arnold, he gave a great reference. He said, most of you will never know the powerful experience it is to have the Lord tell you that a certain man is the right man to lead a stake or to serve in that call. He's like, but we don't know anybody. We come down here, and I tell you now that, like, this is absolutely who the Lord wants doing this calling. Kind of a powerful experience. But part of the process of that is they come down, they get sort of recommendations of who they should be talking to, and they call everybody in, and they stack these meetings, these interviews, and they'll meet with bishops, and they meet with the high council, and they meet with the stake presidency, and then other people as they decide, and they ask for suggestions. Obviously, I was like, definitely me, I should have it. And then I went into my turn on earth Satan rendition. Yeah, sure. And give all. Yeah, that was exactly where I went. They didn't find the humor in it. I was, most of what I say is movie references. You know this, Jeff. You know this about me. They did not know that. But it was kind of an interesting thing to be prayerful about.
Did you walk in with the member of the 70 and have somebody play The Distance by Cake as your walk-up song?
I kept my sunglasses on and just did the lean back all the way through. Yeah.
I feel like Beyonce's Crazy. They jumped right in. Also fit very well just because of the beat. It opens the door. Da, 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 and you just roll in.
Yeah. No, that was my option C. It almost got up to option A, but didn't quite make it. It's interesting because when they invite you to the interview, they say, and hang around just in case we want to call you back to talk further or anything like that. And so you're, obviously I'm in the clear, but I'm sitting at Steak and Shake. Like,
now, did you have to go back? Did you have to go down to Liberty to do this, even though it was a new steak? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, everything.
So you're at the old Steak Center.
In the Steak Center. That's right.
So you went to the Steak and Shake. Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting. I've read some books and stuff and seen people share experience about how this has worked in the past. But it's really, fascinating, sort of a faith-promoting experience to go through it and watch it all happen and sort of be around while all these decisions are being made is really, really great. But then they got to announce the stake on Sunday, and they announced what wards were going where and all that stuff. So it's pretty exciting, man. It really is, and it's cool. It's cool to have lived here for this long and see some growth, some signs of growth where it's recognized now, and we'll have some new buildings that are built. And
nice.
All that kind of stuff is going to
happen. So were there any like new ward reorganizations as part of the process, or just a clean cut?
No. So it's they reorganized or realigned two stakes to make a third. Okay. So it was the Liberty stake and the Platte City stake. But the first, it's the first time that I'd ever been through start from scratch over here. Like normally, I guess anytime you split a stake, you're starting from scratch on one side or the other, right? And it wasn't like calling a new stake president and stuff like that I've seen many times before. This was all right. You got a guy now, and I went and gave its president Michael Call, who was a counselor in this.
A Call? I'm a Call. How fun. We must be related.
I went and gave him a big old hug and said, good luck, man. You got your work cut out for you this week. So off we go on to glory. But Jeff, you had an equally stimulating experience. You were a father.
I had one of the best experiences of my life, honestly. I mean, we joke around so much on this show. Sometimes it's difficult to wax serious, I guess. So we flew home to California, flew to San Diego. To bless our boy. We thought it would be more fun to do it that way. We did it at my in-laws' place. They're very kind to host us there. Had families come down from Orange County. Most of my whole in-law side of the family is all in greater San Diego for the most part. And so people came there. We had a much bigger circle than I ever planned on. It was like 17 guys or something like that. You literally had guys trying to shimmy in with their hands just to get in there.
Jeff, you're very popular.
Well, I was. Yeah, it was a very big circle. But... I was nervous in many ways. I mean, this is, you get one chance to bless your first kid. So I'd been thinking about it a lot in the days leading up to it, really thinking about, it's hard. Like, you don't want to, how it is with any blessing. Like you wind up thinking about what you want to say, but at the same time, you're trying to remember that you want to say whatever the Spirit dictates. So it's sort of this, yeah. There's sort of this dichotomy there. But I've been thinking of those things, and of course, in the end, what I said was not anything I rehearsed in my mind or whatever else. But
no, I heard it. Yeah.
But it was a pretty sweet and cool experience. It meant a lot. It was great to have all these family members there from both sides. A lot of people I love. All you know, ones I've known for years, and ones I've only known for the past you know 3 or odd years with my wife. A real blessing to be with all of them, and just cool to be able to bless your kid. There was a moment when I could hear him stirring a little bit while we were bouncing him. You know, everyone does the baby bounce during these. And so I kind of cracked my eye open a little bit while I was talking. And I thought he'd be squirming around. And he was just staring at me and smiling the whole time. And it was kind of awesome to me. Probably because I was the only thing talking at that point in time. So, I mean, I was his reference point. But that was pretty neat. You know, I know you were bummed you couldn't be there, but I completely understand with the stakes stuff that was pretty important for you to attend, so it was fine. But what a neat experience to be able to just bless your kid and just something. It's just
I can only imagine, man.
Well, you don't. Yeah, yeah. It was. I'm sure many of you listening have been there in one capacity or another. I've stood in circles before and everything, but I certainly felt a certain amount of weight around it. Like I didn't want it to be a trivial thing. You know, like no blessing should be a trivial thing, but unlike important blessings of healing or comfort or anything like that, they just kind of come up when they come up. You know, you bless a kid, you bless a kid, and that's I can't go back and redo it or anything. That's unless they fail to record it for some reason.
What?
And we have to.
He did come out with the correct name. He's not like you didn't name him Alan.
I was tempted. I was tempted. I was going to name him A. Ronald Openshaw. That was my goal. but you know, I made a promise to Danielle that I wasn't going to change his name while I was up there. I should have given him something awesome like Zeus. But then again, his name is Guy, and Guy's a super cool name.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I know
it's pretty good.
You and our friend Steve thought it was funny that my son's name was Guy, but Guy's a pretty cool name when you get down to it, and he's a pretty cool kid, as you know now.
Well, if you've seen that thing you do. You love Guy.
I love that guy. If you've also seen Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, though, there's also that guy. So
there's a lot of guys out there.
I don't want my son to emulate.
You gotta be careful what guys you hang around with.
Yeah, I don't want him to be Guy Fieri. I'd be very disappointed. I'm not going to lie. I'd be disappointed if my son wound up like Guy Fieri.
He's like, Dad, I like my hair this way. Screw you.
And I just say no, that's...
I'm
that's,
sad now.
Al, we don't use that term, by the way, in the home. Please watch your language.
To screw...
I've been working on that myself. I've been trying not to say stupid anymore.
You know, it's funny. I never said screw growing up. I never have until recently. I've found it quite
that
satisfying.
Is because you have become a cantankerous businessman and you have a lot
That's
of stress.
Fair.
You need some of that.
I've needed to shout screw
you, need
you!
Some of,
across
you
the table.
You need
table
some of that
people.
Best massage that you used to have when you lived in Manhattan.
the best back rub.
You need some of that again. It's gonna loosen you up.
Language is funny that way. Well, it's similar a lot of times. You know, I feel like we've chronicled our sort of struggle with rated R movies and whether or not you know we allow ourselves to go and partake of those or if we're better off or not. And I feel like language is a lot that same way. My parents did a great job of sort of you know focusing on finding meaningful ways to articulate your frustrations. And then, you know, but then you get to a point where you're like, you know, I don't know why I don't say that. You know, crumb is only so much of an expletive. It really doesn't do justice to some of the feeling. Ah, crumb. Oh, crumb. You know, sometimes you need something a little bit more strong. And so, you know, I've dabbled in, you know, still.
My dad was big on criminy. Growing up, that was a popular one.
Criminately.
That was a fun one.
Yeah. Do we all? Or, you know, in our house, we were not allowed to say shut up.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying not to say that or that.
I actually really like not saying shut up. I liked it. My mom never wanted us to say it because she never wanted her kids to shout shut up at her. She always thought that was really kind of a crummy exchange between parents and children. So she was like, no, we do not say that. Which made, you know, for me, like that was my really bad S word. That was sort of where my realm of reasoning stopped. And so it made for some very humorous kids say the darndest thing
sure.
sort of moments.
So I find myself now, I mean, I don't profane really or anything, but
not as much as you would like.
Yeah, but I do find myself on other words like that, like shut up or stupid or whatever, trying to weed those out of my vernacular, because it doesn't matter as much right now, but soon enough, I'll have a kid who will pick up on things that we slip up and say. And I would rather be in the habit, before that matters, of avoiding such things. Oh, hey, wife. Do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hello.
There she is, everybody. The reason I live and breathe.
You.
All right, we're 20 minutes in. Maybe we should hit some Mormon news for like five minutes.
Yeah, well, we've got some of that. I know people just come here to listen to us talk. They're curious about how our friendship.
I actually think our listener base is completely evenly split on appreciating the banter or not. I really think it's a clean 50-50.
As are you and I, Jeff. I would banter the whole time. You're the only one that wants to do a real show.
Yeah, I'm trying to, once again, the irony of the business, you, the successful businessman, I'm trying to establish a brand, keep with it. Your brand is entropy. That is your brand.
Okay.
That's a science reference from watching really like Dr. Bill Nye.
All right, well, so we got some Mormon stuff going on. The big news this week, I think the biggest news.
Yeah.
Maybe. Is that, well, all right, I had mainly jokey ones. Lego temples. We've talked about Lego temples before. I feel like we broke the story that Deseret News did later on Lego temples.
We last talked about Lego temples, man, many years ago. I remember it was when we had the Mormon Bachelor.
There was a family that had figured out how to make Lego temples, and I actually ordered the book. Some guy had like recreated church history scenes.
Oh,
Legos.
That was a different one. Yes, that was cool.
I have that book around here somewhere, and it's quite nice. But now there is a man, Dave Jungheim. I don't know how you say his name. But he made a Salt Lake Temple rendition out of 35,000 Legos in 2012. And now it is on display at BYU in the L. Tom Perry Special Collections. So
in the Special Collections named for a late apostle, it's a bunch of Legos is what we're getting at.
Well done, Lego Master. You've made a temple.
Right next to like the Simon Dewey original and some Carl Block stuff, you have the Lego.
Well, it's a pretty good rendition, and he's got little lights in there and everything, but still, it's Legos. It's Legos. So the quote, of course, Legos as a medium for religious expression allows children to participate in and experience something that is sacred and divine. Sort of. It sort of does. Not really.
All right, fair enough. So in our special recurring segment of old scriptures, they found a copy of the 1941 edition of the Book of Mormon, and it was Emma Smith's copy. This is actually very cool and big news for the Latter-day Saint community, and it's kind of funny how this all happened, and we've never known where this disappeared to. So for some history, there were a handful of editions of the Book of Mormon that had names printed on the binding. Originally, Joseph Smith had one, Emma had one, Hiram had one. I believe the 12 all had their own as well. Emma's went missing many, many years ago. No one knows what happened to it.
It went missing?
Yeah, no one...
Like we were looking for it, but we couldn't find it?
I don't know if we'd been actively looking for it or what have you, but it has surfaced in the library of at the home of John Quincy Adams, who was the 6th president of the United States, the son of John Adams, the 2nd president. For all you foreign listeners, especially you terrible Canadians who just elected a liberal government, shame on you all. I'm just kidding. I don't care. But so it tells a story. There's a couple that actually went back. They were in Nantucket. They wanted to check some historic sites out.
All right. Hold on. Hold right there. Who goes to Nantucket? I thought that was just a dirty nursery rhyme.
No.
That's a real place?
It, as a matter of fact, it is, Al. It's in Massachusetts.
All right. Carry
so. On. So the Bascoms went and visited. Eventually, but point is, they were visiting this library, all these historic books, lots of cool stuff. And I think it came up that they were LDS. And so this guide says, oh, do you want to see a cool early copy of the Book of Mormon? He's like, yeah, of course. So he takes them to a table. Then at 6 feet.
These inflections are implied, not exact.
And actually, this is the quoted story.
Yeah.
And then he said, "Sweet,
we'd
bra.
Love to see it, Governor."
You're doing your Dick Van Dyke impression right now. So, but anyways, so right there on the table was a copy of the Book of Mormon given to Charles Francis Adams, who was the son of John Quincy Adams, by Joseph Smith. They asked if they could touch it. Of course, they could not. No photography was allowed. Someone got photographs of it eventually.
How many times has that exact exchange happened in your life? A thousand, maybe.
So, anyway. So, they got some photos of the book. They found out it was actually Emma Smith's personal copy of the Book of Mormon, like we said before. And what happened was, back in the day, this Charles Francis Adams was accompanied by, I forget who was with him, a Quincy fellow who was a state or in the Council of Boston or something like that. They were traveling the country, as one does in 1844, by steamboat up the Mississippi. They stopped in Nauvoo. They were met by Joseph Smith. He entertained them. They saw the temple site. They saw a lot of stuff. And Joseph Smith signed the book, the copy of the Book of Mormon, and gave it to Mr.
He gave
Adams.
Away Emma's copy?
As best as I can tell, unless I'm missing a detail here, it appears that he
so
gave away Emma's
copy. So we've literally been looking for Emma Smith's copy of the Book of Mormon since Joseph accidentally gave it away.
Yeah. Or just gave it away.
Yeah, you know he didn't say that he gave it to that that Republican president.
Also, all of you can take refuge in noting that Joseph Smith was unshaved at the time.
What?
Of their meeting. Yeah. It says, Adams wrote, they stopped and were introduced to the celebrated Joe Smith, a middle-aged man with a shrewd but rather ordinary expression of countenance, unshaved and in clothes neither very choice nor neat.
Oh, I love
that. The whole air of the man was that of a frank, but not coarse vulgarity. He received us civilly and forthwith introduced us into his house.
That's great. I love that that he, after Joseph Smith signs it, he signs it and says, "The chief Mormon gave me this." It's kind of a great description of Joseph Smith. I was here, and the chief of the Mormons gave me this book and did sign heretofore above hitherto.
Yeah, so pretty cool story. Pretty cool little bit of history. So the real question now is going to be whether the church tries to obtain that from the Quincy Library.
Why would they? It's in the library.
To have it, to own it, to have it again.
Speaking of which, if I may, there's been a rebirth of Mormon cinema as of late, Jenna Reese tells us, and I would like to suggest maybe a Nicolas Cage-style reboot where they go and steal the Book of Mormon from the John Quincy Adams cottage in Nantucket. Forget the Constitution.
And
we need a heist.
And they're going to call it National Treasure Book of Secrets.
No, National Treasure, Sacred Book of Secrets.
It's a sacred book.
It's not secret, it's sacred.
No, they'll call it National Treasure, Emma's Story.
All right, that got worse. But, just an idea. And I don't know if I necessarily agree that there's being a rebirth or a 2.0 of Mormon cinema. She thinks that, she says that people are becoming more serious about this. So long as God's Army and God's Army 2, bless their hearts, are in existence, as well as the RM and everything that the, what was that production company, Hailstorm Entertainment?
Yep.
Anything that they've done exists.
Well, they're the ones
think we need a version 2. I watched the Pride and Prejudice Mormon version the other day, and I think that's as good as it's going to get.
Did you watch it on YouTube?
I did, and I sure did. And I said, there's no way that actress is Mormon. She is not Mormon.
More fun is to watch the Book of Mormon movie on YouTube.
How bizarre would it be to be a just like a non-Mormon person? They're like, hey, we're filming this great Quaker film. We want you to be a Quaker in it. Or we want you to be a Quaker that's in a romantic relationship. And you're like, okay, how does one quake? How do I do this? I'm sure, like, how do you be a Mormon? She's a very good Mormon in that. She threw a hymn book. She was frustrated at being 25 and single. All the things. All the things.
I don't know. I do wonder about that in Mormon cinema. It's like actors are accustomed to playing all sorts of people, but I've always assumed that like playing Mormons would be weird for non-Mormons.
I guess not really.
But
right?
Yeah, and they're professionals. You know, it's fine.
And hey, you're just taking a paying gig.
I mean, I assume. I mean, a lot like a lot of the cast of
the Once I Was a Beehive.
Once I Was a Beehive. Plenty of them were not LDS. A lot of the girls in that. I don't know. Just what happens. This is a thing. This is real.
There you go.
So I don't know. Mormon cinema, I think, is sort of making a comeback.
She talked about one. Well, it's because there's stuff like Freetown.
Freetown.
Saratov Approach. And what's the one coming out now? Let It Go.
Just Let Go, which is like the story of a Mormon bishop who loses his family in an accident and has to learn how to forgive.
Yeah. So they're doing a lot of these movies that are good movies made by Mormons and sort of with Mormon themes, but not Mormon movies, right? That's sort of the vibe that they're trying to give.
I think is good because there are lots of classic movies that, of course, involve religion and they're mainstream great films. I mean, she lists some in the article, like Chariots of Fire is one of them. The Mission, which is a great movie if you've never seen it, all about Catholic priests converting natives in South America. Fascinating
the,
movie.
The Mission? Good. I've never
The
heard
Mission.
Of it.
It's got Jeremy Irons and Robert De Niro, and it's a very good movie.
That's why I've never heard of it. If it doesn't have Paul Giamatti, I don't watch it.
That's fair enough. that's why you watch you just watch Lady in the Water on repeat every
day.
That's
the rule that I do live by. And thankfully, he is in Sabrina, the Harrison Ford version.
Is he in that?
Yeah, he's like one of the wait staff.
Okay, so...
That man is a visionary.
On topic, I see where Janarese is going with this because I do feel like the quality of films we're getting now. The main difference here is now we're getting basically more Mormon dramas that are well done. The Hailstorm era was all about like wacky comedies that played to one specific audience. So what I'm curious to see is if we do reinvent Mormon cinema, if there's a 2.0, there's a second act here, if we can get comedies that will somehow work. I think that's a little bit harder to do. It's easy to make dramatic stories about faith and struggle and things like that. But making a comedy that is clearly LDS and not just broadly family entertainment like Hailstorm went in the end when they made like the Pinewood Derby movie and Church Ball and stuff like that. That'll be an interesting quest if anybody wants to take that one on. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah. No, I actually... I actually found a sense of entertainment out of like the singles ward and the RM. I thought that those were actually fairly funny.
The RM is terrible though when you rewatch it.
No, I'm sure it is, but when you're 20 you're like, they get me.
The
really
singles ward
me.
Is actually pretty funny. I still feel that way.
Oh well.
So whatever. I don't know, but maybe it's on the upswing. Let's see what happens. And in this article, Janarese interviews an LDS filmmaker. And that's why. How they're trying to take it more seriously. Make movies that are about Mormons, but not like Mormon movies. That'll only appeal to...
By Mormons, for Mormons. We are Mormons.
And that's a fine line. I even heard in Just Let Go that while it's a Mormon thing about a Mormon bishop, they bother to kind of try to still make it very broadly Christian and show like crosses on churches and stuff like that, which isn't offensive by any means. But like, we're still a little afraid to go all in and just say like, this is a Mormon
just
thing.
Just be Mormon.
Yeah. We're still a little afraid of that. We don't have the audacity to just not feel like we have to pander to the entire Christian community, which is a shame because we have nothing to be ashamed of.
Respect.
Hey, by the way, in other old book news, they've also discovered an old manuscript that might have the origins of the King James Bible.
Go on.
How excited are you? So a handwritten draft of the world's most famous Bible, the King James Version. I would argue perhaps the Guten Bible, the Gutenberg thing might be the most famous Bible. But
oh yeah,
whatever.
Goody. We call Gertrude the Bible, we call it. We archaeologists anyway.
Well, whatever. Point is, they found this handwritten version of King James Bible, which is a very, very, very big deal for historians. I think it was written.
So how does one just find this? Where has it been hidden? I feel like the Book of Mormon of Emma Smith and this Bible, where do you just go to hang out if you don't want to?
And of all the things, they found this is the earliest known draft of the King James Bible, and it was found at the University of Cambridge. I don't know where it's been hiding. They just said, oh, hey, guys, we've never looked at this piece of paper. What does it say? Who knows? But they think this is a big deal, especially to understand more of how they translated and created the King James Version. This could be a watershed moment in the history of the translation of the King James Version. So it's pretty cool. That's all.
Oh, good. I like that.
Good little bit of history there.
Yeah, that's great. But speaking of historical documents, if I may, there's a little PFS, Peggy Fletcher Stack article on, you remember Mark Hoffman, the salamander letter guy?
Oh, yes. That's an interesting period of church history. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, I think I was like 11 and I read that, his biography, and was very concerned with some things, and like, it was a really sort of deep play through some of that stuff. But Mark Hoffman's history is he made a fortune by making fraudulent documents that would put the church in sort of a bad light. And the church was going through an era, this is in the 80s, where they were acquiring historical artifacts for their archives, and some of the stuff mm-hmm. that would maybe make the church seem less than perfect, they were buying from Mark Hoffman and stashing away. And so one of those, I mean, the salamander letters that he was famous for was a letter that supposedly, well, not supposedly, that falsely, Joseph Smith wrote to somebody and said that you know, the Lord came in the form of a salamander and talked to him, or an angel or something like that. And this whole thing, and so they had bought this for a good chunk of money. But anyway, so she writes this article saying that Mark Hoffman, if Mark Hoffman were around today, he would have a much harder time succeeding in this, because the church as a whole, and I think this is true, has actually become more and more okay with you know, it's past. They've come to grips with the fact that it's not necessarily perfect, and they're not trying to be perfect anymore, which I think is a big step that we've been able to take, where we can say, no, you know what, not everything is cut and dry, and it's not all the highlight reel, and we're okay reconciling that. So I would agree that we are in a state where you know, those fraudulent style documents and stuff, we would be okay with them coming out and then running tests on them and then saying, oh yeah, yeah, no, that's actually false, or that's a real thing, or that's not collaborated with or corroborated by anything else. Things like that, which is a good place for the church to be. Kind of a cool little read.
I think it must have been very interesting to live through that. I mean, I was just a little kid, so obviously I don't remember it.
Wait, you remember it in real life? Are you older than
me? No, I don't. I was very young. I am older than you by a smidge.
Yeah, that's fair.
A smidge. But how interesting that must have been. Yeah, what a totally different period of history. We would never, this would never happen. And because of it, though, the church also learned lessons in the process of just like, we took so much at face value at the time just because somebody came out and was like, hey, I've got cool documents.
Who's yeah, in? Well, because a lot of it, I mean,
he was
like,
a master forger, too.
I found these in the old basement of the Wilford Woodruff house, and they're like, ah, shoot. Well, didn't know those were around. But now a lot more stuff, like there's been a lot more investigation around that too. Like they've searched for a lot more texts and stuff. Whereas at the time, now, it was sort of,
imagine if he would have gone as far as saying, like, hey, I found the lost 116 pages.
The lost plates of Laman and Lemuel. I've read those.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Really interesting though, because look at what happened recently this fall with Julie Rowe. Not quite the exact same thing. You know, she wasn't presenting historic documents, but she was trying to convince Latter-day Saints that the rapture was impending, right, based on her own experiences. And it's, I don't know how it would have been if that would have happened in the 80s. There's no social media, of course. That would have been different. But how would that have been back then? You know, I don't know. Because today, something like that happens. We're so cautious, and then the church comes out and says, yeah, don't, like, give an ear to this. It's just nothing for you to worry about. And yeah. I'm very glad that the church is now more transparent, and we open up more and more, and we accept the weaknesses of man that are part of our history, which is great. We
go.
Should. Speaking of, sorry, I was saying, speaking of the weaknesses of man, apparently Kate Kelly has the power to ordain Catholic women priests. I wasn't aware of this.
Go on.
But it's a thing. This took a couple of reads. When I first saw good old Peggy, this is Kristen Moulton. My bad. When I first saw this shared on social media, I was really confused because they said, like, women ordained to the Catholic priesthood. And I'm thinking in my mind, pretty sure Catholics don't have female clergy. I'm pretty sure that's still a thing. Okay, I might be a little rusty, but last time I checked, they frowned upon that whole idea.
Okay.
And they still do. As it turns out, at a lovely gathering of 50 men and women, many of them in Salt Lake City, for the Parliament of the World's Religions, hung out for a female ordination of Catholic women who are part of their own group to be Catholic because they say they're disobeying an unjust law that discriminates against women in our church. So that's interesting, but they're basically just taking whatever priestly authority. I try to say this with respect for what people are going through. I just don't understand, especially if you're Catholic or Mormon and your tradition of authority is all about lineage and how that's been passed down. You know, from us, the Restoration, from Catholics, Linus, etc. And how that factors in when you're just deciding, well, we have a jacked up policy in our church, and so we're just taking the reins here. But I'm still thinking like, well, who gave you the priesthood to give other people the priesthood? Like, where does this fall in line? They do say that there was a cardinal who once ordained female clergy at some point. But the Catholic Diocese of Salt Lake City wants nothing to do with it. And then the Kate Kelly element of this is Kate Kelly was there as part of the ordinations, which raises up all sorts of other questions. Like, apparently now Kate Kelly recognizes the Pope and believes in transubstantiation and all sorts of things that I was never aware of. So I just have no idea. She's such a chameleon these days. Who knows?
I sense sarcasm.
Not about the chameleon thing. I mean, really, before with Kate Kelly, it's like, okay, you don't have to agree with ordained women. Don't have to agree with some of the methods employed. But, you know, she's like, hey, I love the church. I love the gospel. Love the priesthood. This is where the priesthood is found and we want it. And now it's like more and more as time has gone on. It's just like, okay, now she's ordaining Catholics. I don't understand, but okay.
It's kind of it's got to be a long walk to land on where you're like, okay, you know who will give me the priesthood? Not the Catholics, but I'm taking it anyway. So good luck stopping me. There is, let's see. Oh, yeah, yeah. So the Marriott hotel chain has an interesting campaign. Love Travels is their campaign. They are promoting the gay lifestyle, as they're saying, and saying, come stay with us. This is they're sort of opening up this as a marketing channel. One of the first hotel chains sort of do that. And it's in the news, obviously, because it's Mormon-owned. And operated, but they are doing things seemingly un-Mormon, though maybe it's a little bit more Mormon than you think. So here's the challenge, and Jeff and I were actually talking a little bit about some stuff around this before the show. But on the one hand, it's good, like it's good to be kind and gracious to our guests. Be them gay or lesbian, or be them straight and narrow, however they may be, to be good gracious hosts. And so, as a hotel chain focusing on that hospitality, I think it's a good thing. I don't know, Jeff, what are you clicking over there? You're typing an awful lot.
Oh, my Chrome crashed, so I was trying to get the stuff back up.
It's coming back
strong.
So I'm here.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Thoughts?
Well, like, you know, it's like, what, of course, now, by the way, we're getting this from Charisma News. Charisma is actually a spiritual, you know, Christian-leaning publication. So there's certainly an angle with the way they report this, that, you know, as they describe it, as Marriott is actively promoting homosexual lifestyles. A lot of loaded language there.
They're just running a campaign that says, hey, come stay with us. All you good gay people?
It's like anybody else. It's like when the Supreme Court legalized gay marriage and all of a sudden you went to like Delta Airlines and they had a rainbow on their homepage just to say, hey, like we're with you. And I honestly think so much of that is not even actually caring about the politics of it and just companies saying,
how do I make money?
By the by.
How do I make money?
We're with you guys. Come, you know, give us your business. Give us your business. We'll say, give us your business.
But
Marriott's doing the same thing.
It speaks to a larger conversation though, because what you and I were talking about was you know, there's instances where like a Mormon company would need to do some things that are that would not necessarily be Mormon. For instance, operate on Sundays, right? You go to the MTC, you got to have people there serving food on Sunday. You go to a hospital, right. You got to have people in there. And so you're forcing people to break the Sabbath.
Yeah, but the examples you are giving are, one, helping the Lord's missionaries have food, and two, saving mortal lives.
Sure, absolutely. We could all, I mean, so literally, we could
argue that those are both more necessary examples is what I mean.
Necessary or not, I mean, if I'm the one that has to go and wash the dishes, I don't feel like I'm serving the Lord's missionaries necessarily. I feel like I have to work on Sunday. Right,
and that might be fine. I'm just saying.
Why not? So take that example. The dishes could sit until Monday, could they not? I've referenced before. I have a bakery in which I sell coffee. Right. This is one of those where I'm Mormon, and I'm sort of embracing this culture that is not my own in order to make more money and sell things. In doing that, I create jobs, I create economy, a town that does like to drink coffee, is very appreciative of my gesture. You know, it would almost be like having a Mormon tent at a fair and offering and knowing that everybody drinks coffee and offering it there and saying, we're doing this as a way to sort of reach out to other people. There's a question there of should we or should we not do that? Should the Marriott Hotel chain not reach out to the gay community and say, "Hey, we're actually totally fine with this. Come stay with us. We don't care." I mean, like as a hotel chain, smart move. Go market to some of these people and say, "Come stay with our hotel." Absolutely. Serve if you're a bakery, serve some coffee to people if they want coffee. If you're a dining or a restaurant, serve wine to them if they want wine with their steak dinner. Whatever it is, are we okay with that? Is that a good thing? Is it better to create those inroads with people that are looking for it? Or should we have a moral line where we say, because we don't agree with this, I will not participate?
I really opened this one up to our listeners. So there'll be a post with this on Facebook. Comment on it or send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com.
Because we are
but two men with opinions.
We are two mighty men with opinions.
Yes, the mightiness is not in dispute.
Thank you.
And like I've said before on this, Al, I recognize that these are nuanced issues, right? And so much of it feels like it's a scalable thing. Like when you're so big, you can't just pull the plug, and then, you know, you and I talked about, you know, what about Chick-fil-A, right? Chick-fil-A just says, well, we're not going to be open on Sundays. We never have, because it's important to us, and that's that. And they've done that for so long that it's part of their brand identity now. And I think people look at, there's lots of things, plenty of people look at Chick-fil-A that they don't like, you know, supporting traditional marriage causes. There's a lot of stuff like that.
But even
on the Sunday thing,
when the stores open Monday morning, you know their fulfillment, their operations piece was operating on Sunday. They have people that are working on Sunday. They got to.
That's
move
a fair
stuff.
Point. I mean, their stores are not open on Sunday. And then there's the drawback of gosh, this is a lot of pulling things around. But say Chick-fil-A is like a righteous cause that you want people to experience, just hypothetically, right? That's some important thing.
The chicken sandwich is changing lives. Yeah,
this is all a metaphor. Sure,
a chicken sandwich.
But because
me to
of
Jesus.
This,
go on.
But because of their refusal to be open on Sunday, which is a very noble cause, they've also been unable to enter a lot of more urban markets for a long time. Chick-fil-A is still not in New York City. I think they're finally opening a Chick-fil-A in New York City because the New York City market will not stand for something not being open on Sunday. That said, who's to say we have to cater to Babylon? Not me. You know, whatever.
Babylon, of course, being New York City.
Yeah, it's not like our goal in life and our need is to cater to the whims of every consumer and every individual that is around. Like, we can have our standards and stick by them and pray and hope for the best that we're doing the right thing. I think in the end, it's a matter of course, it's a cop-out answer, but to, like, prayerfully consider what you're doing and follow the promptings you receive one way or the other, and try not to go into it with any, the hardest thing with that is to try not to go into it with any preconceived notions and let that skew what you're trying to achieve, which can be really hard when you're praying for guidance on things. It's so difficult
Sure.
not to inevitably be trying to nudge the Lord in one way or another. It's really hard to avoid doing that. Well, and I could see this being the same situation. You're a business owner, Al. You're thinking about the livelihood of your employees. You're thinking about the success of the company. And I could see, you know, I don't have any, but, you know, I'm sure you deal with things like this all the time. Well, and you're thinking about, well this one little thing
a restaurant is a great example, affect my right? Like with, yeah. Without wine, it was not in the black. With wine, it is in the black. So do we choose to shut down based on our moral principle that we do not drink? Or do we serve alcohol to those who would buy alcohol and have a restaurant with jobs and sort of be a part of a community that we otherwise wouldn't be able to participate in? What's the right solution?
And that's what I'm saying. That's a tough one. Or is there sometimes a third door? Is there something that would compensate for that? It's very difficult in the restaurant industry because alcohol forms a huge part.
Those margins are tremendous, if I may.
Really is. That's why whenever you go out to eat, they push booze on you.
And when you hire Mormons, you don't have to worry as much about your inventory leaking. Let's see.
Oh, we're done? Fine, we're done.
No. Well, no. I mean, do you have any other? Do you have anything else on that?
I think I did, but it just.
No, I'm sorry.
It left my little pee.
I wasn't trying.
It's okay.
I wasn't trying to move us along.
Oh, I think it's fine, but I do think it's a very, very interesting topic. And like, the other thing that popped in my mind, I've talked about this a million times before. The church itself doesn't like own the companies that are at City Creek, but you could very easily say, well, there's stuff at City Creek that doesn't gel with our beliefs, and the church is profiting from that. Who knows, right? And then this goes along with, this feeds right into like the church developing the land in Florida. We had a listener wrote in about this week, and there's actually some pieces about some opposition to that in Florida, mostly for environmental reasons.
Well, a lot of people are saying the church shouldn't do for-profit endeavors. Like they should do things in order to serve the poor and needy. But there's an argument to be made of the church of them being able to go and make more principal in order to use that interest to help others. Right. I mean, it's a conversation I've had with myself of like, I'm going to be fine with some imbalance and not spending as much time with my family right now as I would like or whatever it is. And instead going and creating opportunity, making my mark so that then later I have the opportunity to go and serve the Lord in a greater capacity.
That's exactly right. I'm going to sin now and then I can repent later when it doesn't matter to me anymore. That's I use that same logic every day.
Yeah, good. No.
Obviously.
Snarl. Yeah, so anyway. There is a development going on in Florida. The church is developing this land for this cattle ranch. And that's the controversy. That's what people are questioning. Is this right for a church
and
to
I don't
be
think
doing?
I don't think it's crazy controversial. And of course, this is different from, profiting off of like stuff that is against our beliefs. We don't like not believe in building houses or anything,
necessarily believe as a church that the right way to spend money is on making more money, right? Maybe we believe as a church that when we donate to a church, they're going to use that money to go and help the poor, and we can subsist only on the donations of its members. Or is the church prudent in going and developing that to make more money?
Yeah, that's what I think. Though I don't know what they're going to do with all the ranch land, since we are one of the biggest like beef producers in the country and all that. You know, who's going to keep doing that? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't have the answers. Another quick one here. Where does the time go? So, Al, Kim Davis?
Yeah.
The clerk in Kentucky. Everybody, if you
the
missed that over the past
Smash
month
Mouth.
Or
sure.
so. That's the one. Somebody wants to. So, Kim Davis.
The president of BYU.
Well, that's close. Very close. Very close. But this one's a woman from Kentucky who wouldn't give gay people marriage licenses.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that case has been, it's been a very interesting, she was arrested for it, then released. Very interesting situation here. So, okay, I kind of thought her 15 minutes were over for the most part, and that was a wrinkle in the story. But then, just today, actually, Elder Oaks was in Sacramento, California, speaking at a gathering of lawyers and judges and such, and he actually called out Kim Davis by name, disagreeing with her actions. Very interesting. He said that public officials are, quote, not free to apply personal convictions in office.
So he did not call her out by name.
No, he did later on. He did actually later on. He said that, but he actually called her out by name and said and discussed the clerk in Kentucky who took matters into her own hands and argued that that was inappropriate, which is very interesting. It's another incident, an example of the church sort of trying to move into more moderate territory on these issues and try to instead preach middle ground.
I wish you would come speak to my high priest group because they all loved Kim Davis.
Oh, did they? Well, that's understandable.
Monsters. Anyway.
But that's very big news that just happened today and a very interesting
precedent.
Yeah,
good for Elder Oaks. I like us being a little bit, taking some stands that maybe everybody on the far right doesn't agree with. I'm looking at you, Sarah Palin.
Or anywhere. I think it's very, very interesting. This could inform our views on things a lot going forward.
Yeah, I like it. Let's see, in some mentions here, groundbreakings for Tucson and the Concepcion temples.
They happened.
Went down.
Over the week.
It was a real thing. So good work, temples. You're on your way to being a grown-up full temple. Good luck.
There's a funny piece that makes a point to that AP, of all places, forgets a little detail in its reporting about in that it forgets to use the proper name of the church. It just says Mormon Church. Best practice in reporting, like anything, is to use the correct name at first instance and then do whatever you want. The church publishes its own media guidelines accordingly, encouraging people to do that. So the first time you mention the church, to actually say the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Afterwards, you can say LDS Church, Mormon Church, we don't love it, but whatever, as long as you're appropriate going out the
gate.
But
an AP article didn't do that?
AP, which is, it's more egregious when someone like,
don't you
an
ever,
organization like...
Don't you ever wish you could write more than one article about somebody's grammatical error?
I wish I could do it all day.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my goodness. So AP failed to do it, and then what I do love in this article is that they the article says called AP forgets a tiny detail in story about Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So they also left out the, which is a proper part of our title. It's not like a lowercase the. If you ever see someone lowercase the Church of Jesus Christ,
hit them.
That's wrong. You should hit them over the head with your cane or your cell phone.
Yeah, use a cane. Definitely.
The is capitalized. It's part of the church's name. Remember that.
All right, Jeff. I feel.
You don't want to read six tips for missionaries from St. George's worst news publication? Oh, I'm shocked.
No, it was a dumb one. Sad. And there were 2,000 returned missionaries that did some Latin America show with David Archuleta. Don't care about either of those. Everybody, you've been delightful. Thank you for spending time with us. I love reading your emails. You sent us some good emails this week. A couple of you had some good conversations that or brought good things to our attention, so thank you for that.
Sorry we didn't get
contact,
to that.
Contact at thisweekinmormons.com. We love to hear from you. Or visit thisweekinmormons.com and leave a comment on any of the posts there. We get emails about all of them, and then we go there and argue with you. It's fun.
And as I mentioned before, the book face and the Twitter and all the places of the media that is social, do it. Be there with us. Hang out with us. We will love it as well. You should. And write us a review on iTunes. Do that too.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Also, if you've never listened to them before, keep a lookout for Sunday School Bonanza, our Gospel Doctrine podcast, and Third Hour of Power, which goes over the teachings of the Presidents of the Church manual. Great stuff there. And people enjoy it. It's a little more serious.
Yeah, the seriousest. All right, Jeff. Have a great week, man.
All right, Al. Be great, everybody. Thanks for listening to This Week in Mormon.
What did you used to say? Well. Be well. Be holy. Be wealthy.
Be happy.
Happy. I always get those mixed up.
Be a capitalist.
All right, man. All right. See you, buddy.
Bye, folks.
This Week in Mormons.